today is the observance that many Jews have of Yom HaAtzmaut, Israeli Independence Day. I do not want to talk about the politics of Israel. I don't want to talk about the controversy behind it all. But I think it's an appropriate time to discuss the land of Israel as a Torah foundation. So this class will be avoiding, I hope, political discussions, avoiding opinions on settlements or peace or prime ministers or the religious value of the state. I'm staying away from that currently, the state of Israel. But we have to differentiate between the state of Israel and the land of Israel. So today, since the state of Israel is on our minds, we'll talk about the land of Israel as a Jewish value from the beginning, from Abraham and onwards. The Eretz Yisrael itself is a foundation of Judaism. Our love for the land of Israel, our claim to the land of Israel, our yearning for the return to the land of Israel, the fact that most mitzvahs that we have in the Torah are only relevant when the Jews are in Israel. I believe the number is that out of the 613, only 270 are relevant to us nowadays on a Torah level.
270.
On a biblical level, 270. The other 343 mitzvos are in some way or the other connected to the land of Israel and the Jews. And the Jews being in the land of Israel. So 270 are relevant to us nowadays on a biblical level. We have many mitzvos we observe rabbinically anyways, but in terms of the Torah level, I guess they have the right to talk much as we do with restaurants, so we do.
What?
So they have as much the right to talk to restaurants as we do, so... yeah. Anyways. So on a Torah level, 270 mitzvahs are irrelevant nowadays, because the rest of them are bound to the land of Israel, and the Jews reside in the land of Israel. And right now, we don't have a majority of Jews in the land of Israel, we don't have a temple, we don't have a Jewish king in the land of Israel, and therefore, a majority of our mitzvahs are no longer relevant on a biblical level. So... we know traditionally, what? It's getting closer. It's not quite there yet, but it's getting closer.
Besides, you might learn something here.
How do you know that?
So the classically, we have sources in Tehillim and Psalms and onwards. Jews go to the land of Israel. We kiss the ground. We appreciate the actual land, the dirt, the stones. It's a verse in Tehillim, Ki ratzu avadechas avaneha. Your servants, they desire her stones, v'safara yechonanu, and they embrace the dirt, of Eretz Yisrael. That's a verse in Tehillim and Psalms. The Gemara says that certain rabbis would come to Eretz Yisrael, and they would kiss the borders, they would hug the rocks. I mean, the land is so dear to us for generations, ever since the beginning. The ideas, as we said, unfortunately get lost in the debates, the modern debates over the state of Israel, and the politics, and the land, and the Palestinians, both politically and religiously. We have debates amongst Jews religiously, what's the significance? We have debates politically, what's the significance? And those debates kind of make us forget the main point, which is the land of Israel is a foundation of Judaism from the start. So we have to divorce, as we said, the modern state of Israel, which is its own separate discussion, which I do not want to enter into today, to the significance of the land historically. There's two separate discussions. First, I just want to point out that the land of Israel, the rabbis tell us, is viewed as the center of the world. And what does that mean? I mean, just purely physically, the world until the past, past 1,000 years was essentially Asia, Africa, and Europe, and the land of Israel is right in the center. I mean, you look at the map, and Israel is a crossroads between Asia, Africa, and Europe. This is a very simple geographical point. Israel is the center of the world. On a globe, so a globe is round. So you can point to any point and say, this is what we call the center. So God tells us, what I look at as the focal point of the world, the center point of the whole world, is the land of Israel. That's where my world revolves around that land. That land is where we're going to talk about how that land, God's will and God's providence over the world, emanates through the land of Israel outwards. And we're going to discuss that a little bit. The Gemara tells us the land of Israel lacks nothing. And it's interesting, the climate in the land of Israel, you have snowy mountains, you have desert, you have oceans, you have lakes, you have all sorts of climates in the land of Israel, all sorts of wildlife and animals, and beautiful produce. So on a very practical level, Israel is the center point of the world. And plus, read the papers. Look, I mean, the whole world focuses. For some reason, the whole world is just obsessed with the land of Israel. This tiny little piece of land. My 12-year-old nephew, I study with him on Skype once a week for his bar mitzvah. He always points out to me that it's about the size of the state of New Jersey. And it's...
Does he live in Israel?
He lives in Georgia. But whenever we talk about Israel, he always laughs and says, it's the size of the state of New Jersey, but yet the whole world's obsessed with it. You know, but it's a tiny piece of land. It's not a huge land, as we all know. So where does this power come from? Why is it the foundation of Jewish? What does it mean? Why do we need a land? Why do the Jews have to have a claim to a land? So it goes back in the Torah, the very first verse in the whole entire Torah, Bereshis bara Elokim. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So Rashi, the great commentary on the Torah, his very first comment on the entire Torah, Rashi says, why does the Torah begin with the story of creation? And Rashi tells us, because he quotes a verse from Tehillim, Koch masav higid le'amo, God told his nation the power of his deeds, laseis lem nachlas goyim or, so he could give to them the inheritance of nations. Meaning Rashi explains that God knows that the Jews are going to live in the land of Israel. God knows that until the Jews came about, other people were living there. So how could God take the piece of land from other nations and give it to the Jews? So Rashi tells us the Torah begins with creation to show that I created it, I give it to who I want to give it to. So I'm the boss. That's why we start with creation. That's this very simple first line of Rashi in the entire Torah. The story of creation, one purpose that we have it at all, why is it relevant to us? We have to know God created the world. But why is it such an important part to begin the Torah with? Because there's a focus on the land of Israel. That we have to know that when God divvies out the lands, he can put them where he wants to put them. And even if somebody's living there prior to the Jews, it makes no difference. God's the owner, God's the boss, God created it, and God passes it on so he wants to have it. Very first Rashi in the entire Torah. When you look through the patriarchs, the very first command given to Abraham Avinu, to Abraham, was, Lech Lecha, leave your land and go to the land of Canaan, of Canaan, the land of Israel. Very first thing God says to the very first Jew, go to the land of Israel. Very first thing he was told. When Abraham arrives, so God promises Abraham, I will give your offspring this land. And in my research, I found at least 6 or 7 times that God repeated this promise to Abraham alone. If you look through the story of Abraham in the Torah, at least 6 or 7 times God tells Abraham, I promise I will give this land to you and to your offspring. So this was part of the central covenant made between God and Abraham, the founder of the people, was that the land of Israel will be theirs. I'll just read you some quotes. God, after, when he first arrived, we just quoted that when Abraham first arrives in the land of Canaan, God tells him, I'm going to give your offspring this land. After Abraham and his nephew Lot separate, God appears to Abraham and tells him, this entire land that you see in front of you, I will give to you and to your offspring eternally. Later on, God tells Abraham, get up, walk across the entire land, its length and its width, for it's going to be yours. He tells him later on in the Torah, in chapter 15 of Bereishis, God tells Abraham, I am God, who brought you out of Ur Kasdim, which is your homeland, to give to you this land for a heritage for your children. And then it says again, later on in that same chapter, on that day God made a covenant with Abraham, saying, I will give to your offspring this land from the river of Egypt, I'm assuming that means the Nile, all the way until the Euphrates. And then again God tells him later on, I will give to you and your offspring after you the land in which you are living, the land of Canaan, for an eternal heritage, and I will be for you your God. So those are already 6 quotes I found straight to Avraham Avinu. This is the central, one of the central points of the covenant between the Jews and God is the land of Israel. One source. So besides being the point of the Rashi's first comment in the entire Torah, and the first command given to Abraham, this promise is reiterated over and over again to Abraham. Again to Yitzchak, Abraham's son, God tells Yitzchak, I will give to you and your offspring all these lands that you see. So that's the promise to Yitzchak, and it carries on to Jacob, to Yaakov. God tells Yaakov, the land upon which you lay, I will give to you and your offspring, and you will burst forth east, west, north, and south. So God promises it to every single one of the patriarchs individually that your offspring will reside and will own this piece of land. Additionally, Yitzchak tells his son Yaakov for the same exact thing. Yitzchak tells Yaakov that God will give to you the blessing of Abraham and give to your children this land upon which you are living as a heritage, etc. So, again, every single patriarch was promised by God individually, you will have the land of Israel. and they passed it on to one another, that the blessing of Abraham, which includes in it the land of Israel, goes to every single generation of the patriarchs onwards to their children. Again, taking it further in the Torah, God tells Moshe the same exact promise several times. God tells you, I'm taking you out of Egypt to bring you to this beautiful land flowing of milk and honey that I promised to your ancestors. It's reiterated to Moshe several times as well. And the entire story in the desert was the Jews trying to get to the land of Israel. Moshe yearned to make it in. He was punished. He wasn't allowed into the land of Israel at the end of the Torah. But that was the entire focus of their journey, leaving Egypt, was to get to the promised land. Because that was the foundation of the covenant made between God and Abraham.
It's a whole big story that weren't on Aliyah, isn't it?
40-year
Aliyah story.
You could view it that way. I'm sure with some bumps
that's
along
a
the
good,
way.
That's a good thing.
With some bumps along the way. But the truth is, that is one overarching theme of the entire Torah. Starting from the very first verse in the Torah, where Rashi tells us that God teaches us about creation to tell us that the land, he can give the land to who he wants. And then, right, bringing it through the patriarchs, Abraham, to the Jews in the desert, all the way to the very end of the Torah, which they're now entering into the land of Israel. The book of Joshua begins, now they're going to conquer Israel and divvy out the portions to all the different tribes. So you could view it, that's one overarching theme, yes, the entire Torah. It's one, I like how you said, one Aliyah story.
It's basically, it kind of leads us up to entering into the land of Israel.
Yeah.
And Moshe doesn't go. And it kind of like puts it on to us.
Right.
Say, so what are you going to do about it? Are you going to go to Israel? Or are you going to be like the Jews on the banks
there.
Of the Jordan? It kind of like throws it in our laps.
Right.
So what are you going to go? You can go to, you know what
interesting,
I mean?
Interesting message you think.
Yeah.
So we see in the sources, it's clear, this is a central point of Judaism. Now, why is it so central? Why is it so important? Why do we need a land? Well, what's the significance of it? So I want to try to introduce the concept of why it's important for us to have a land and what it means to us. The word for land in Hebrew is Eretz. Eretz consists of the letters Aleph Resh Tzadi. The Resh Tzadi means rut, to run. Eretz and Arutz, I will run. Is the same the words are connected. Sources point out these words are connected. Arutz, I will run. Eretz means land. What's the significance of that? Because every land has its influence on those who dwell there. Every land has its power, its atmosphere, where it pushes you. Now, we don't like making stereotypes, but we understand a stereotype usually comes from some element of truth. Why is it that people live in certain parts of the world or the country, certain counties, certain areas, certain climates, look differently, act differently, in a general basis? Some sort of sociologists have a lot of reasons for you, and scientists will figure out what caused it. But our sources tell us that lands actually do influence those who live there. I mean, you take a Sephardi Jew and Ashkenazi Jew. We came from the same place 2,000 years ago. We took different tours throughout the world until now. We came back together again in the past century. And clearly, there's differences, differences in how we look and how we act and our customs, and for sure in our customs, but it's based on differences in personalities. There are differences, it's clear. Again, we don't like the stereotype, but we do see differences. It's true. And so our sources tell us that because the area in which you live does have an effect upon you. There's a reason why we talk about there's Southerners, and there's people who live in the Northeast, and there's people who live in, in Louisiana, and different in America. People live in different areas. So there's accents. There's also different attitudes and different things that come from where you live. Again, a sociologist will tell you it's based on the circumstances in which they're in, but there's something to that. But also there's something to the fact that different lands have a different influence upon you. A European versus an Asian versus a German versus African versus an American. There's differences, we definitely sense differences. That's the truth to that. So Eretz being Arutz, every land has its place to which it makes you run, or pushes you. The word Eretz also, the word Ratzon is your desire, your will. Because your land actually impacts your desire. Ratzon is a desire. So it's all this come the same root. Your desire is that which you run towards. You run towards, that's what you desire. And a land creates in you a push. There's a current in every single land pushing you in certain directions. So just like every person needs their place, just like, let's say for instance, a farmer wants to farm land. So if you want to grow potatoes, you have to find the right climate, the right land for potatoes. If you want to grow oranges, you find the right land, the right place to grow oranges. Every person needs their place. And both, figuratively and literally. Figuratively, we say, if I say I found my place, it means I found a place where I'm very comfortable, which I can thrive. I can reach my potential in this place. This is where I belong. So every people, they need their place. We need our place. Your place is what is that place which fits who you are. Your goals in life in this place come together, and through that you can reach your full potential. That's how it works. So you can't reach, just like you can't grow oranges in Alaska, I think you need a tropical climate to grow oranges. So just so you know, certain people cannot thrive in certain locations based on that which the location offers them. So again, both on a very simple physical level, but also on a spiritual level. There's a spiritual current in every single location which is going to affect the person living there.
It's interesting because what they want to do could be affected by where they... You're talking about the effect of the place, kind of like both sides, the effect of the place on a person and the effect of how a person wants to be and where what the place is like.
Yeah, they do work together. It's interesting. They do work together. It's true. But so the application of this to the Jewish people in the land of Israel hopefully is coming apparent. But the Jewish people, we have a special mission in this world. We have our neshama. We have a special mission from God. And we have a Jewish soul within us to help us fulfill that mission. The land of Israel, we call it Eretz Yisrael. Yisrael, the word is broken up into two words. Yashar El, straight to God. It's the land which pushes you straight to God. Yashar Kel. Yisrael is the letters make you, it's a land which the current in the land of Israel is a divine current. It's a land which brings you closer to God. Even before it was called Israel, we called it the land of Canaan, Canaan. The word Canaan in Hebrew comes from the word meaning humility. It's a land which engenders humility in a person. It makes you humble. It makes you bow down before the Creator. So it's an Eretz, it's a place that makes you run, that pushes you, influences you, Yashar Kel, straight to God, or pushes you to humility, to subjugation before God. It's very interesting. If you look at the Torah's accounts of Abraham, so prior to God speaking to Abraham in the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, at the very end of Parshas Noach, the Torah actually tells us that Abraham and his father, Terach, who was an idol worshiper, set off to the land of Canaan. And commentaries try to figure out, well, they're going there and why did God tell them to go there, if they're already on their way, and what happened, and why did they stop? There's a whole discussion there. But Abraham already set off to the land of Canaan prior to talking to God, prior to God's command of Lech Lecha, that you should go to the land of Canaan. So the commentator, the Sephorno, says, why was that? Because he says it was known in Abraham's time that the land of Canaan was a land which was already had its character of bringing people to contemplation and to service of God. So Abraham, prior to receiving prophecy, was aware, it was known in the ancient world that this land, this piece of land called the land of Canaan, was a place where one can reach out to God. That was known. So Abraham and his father already had set forth to go to this land prior to Abraham's prophecy. What happened, why they stopped, etc., that's left up to the commentaries to figure out. So if you look at the commentaries in the Torah, they figure out what happened. Why did God have to go ahead and command him to go? But it was known that this piece of land is a special piece of land. The Gemara tells us, Avira deretz Yisrael machkim, the air of the land of Israel makes you wiser. There's something in the air. You go to the land of Israel and it should make you a little bit wiser, help you connect more to the truth. The atmosphere has a profound effect on a person. That's the source we have in the Talmud. Just to bring you other sources about the power of this land, Rabbeinu Bechaya, who is one of the great commentaries in the Torah, he points out that the land of Israel is referred to as the Shar HaShemayim. It's the gate towards heaven, particularly Jerusalem, but Israel in general. There, we discussed there's a heavenly Beis HaMikdash, a heavenly temple, which corresponds to the earthly temple. And the two meet in Jerusalem. And from that you have the connection of the spiritual to the physical world. And that all it's as if these two worlds kiss in Jerusalem, and from there that spirituality spreads out to our world, to the planet Earth. That's where it goes. Because the place where heavens touch the earth, that's the land of Israel. Another commentary, the Rabbeinu Nissim, the Ran, he says that in the land of Israel, the soul is more prepared to cling to the heavenly light brought into this world from God. And these are all pointing to the same idea, that the land of Israel is the place where God made, this is the land which pushes you towards the pure, towards spirituality, more so than the rest of the world. So the Jewish soul needs to find its place. Just like any person, any individual, they always search. People are searching to find their place in life. We always talk about that. Somebody says, I found my place in life. I feel I can finally produce and thrive where I am, what I'm doing. So the Jewish soul, its place is in this land, because the Jewish soul, its job is to reach out and connect to the Creator. And the land of Israel is the place that is most appropriate for that. It's the place that has these spiritual currents pushing us towards the Creator, creating that gate to the heavens. That's what the land of Israel tells us. beyond that, there's a quote in the It's a quote in the Torah. Get this out. It's in the book of Devarim in Parshas Ekev. So Devarim chapter 11. And it's in the book of Devarim, you have a lot of discussion about the land, because this is when the Jews are really just on the outskirts of the land of Israel. So this is when God and Moshe are preparing them to enter into the land. And it says in the book of Devarim, find it here. Wow, the same person calling. The land that you are coming to inherit, it's not like the land of Egypt that you left from. Because in the land of Egypt, how did you farm? You would plant your seeds, you'd water the crops by foot. I mean, in Egypt, there wasn't much rain. What they had to do was go to the Nile and draw water or build some sort of system to bring the water to their crops and water it manually. That's how they had to water the crops in the land of Egypt. But Israel is different. But the land to which you are going is a land full of mountains and hills and valleys, and you'll drink from the rains of the heavens. It's the land that God, the Hashem your God, seeks constantly. God's eyes are upon this land from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. So you have two things described in this brief passage of the Torah. Number one, it distinguishes between how they watered crops in Egypt and how you water crops in Israel. Egypt, you water crops by hand, drawing water from the river and bringing it to your crops. In Israel, you rely upon heavenly rain. Rain coming down from the skies.
From Egypt, did you say?
In Egypt, you water from the Nile. You have to draw water in the Nile and then water the crops from the river. In Israel, it comes down from the rain. Rainwater waters the crops. In Egypt, the rain was very much localized and did not hit all the farms. They had to water it by foot. And then it tells you that God is constantly seeking out this land. God's eyes are upon it from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. Those are the two different points mentioned in this passage in the Torah. So let's understand what the Torah is pointing out to us. This contrast between how you water crops, it's a metaphor for something much deeper. When you're in the land of Egypt, so you have to draw water on your own from the Nile. When you're in the land of Israel, you're relying upon rainwater. So what does that mean? It means that when in Israel, it could be a very positive thing, because if it rains a lot, you can sit back and relax, and God waters the crops for you. But if God doesn't provide that rain, so then you're going to be in big trouble, because your crops aren't going to grow. And unfortunately, over the years, there have been years where Israel has plenty, and Israel has had famine, because they don't have enough rain. But they're very much reliant upon the rainwater. In Egypt, so it's up to you. You can go water your crops from the river or not. The Nile River, I think it's pretty much always full, and you go take care of it yourself. So it was left up to human hands in Egypt to water crops. In Israel, you're relying upon God. If God provides rain, then you're in good shape. If God doesn't provide rain, so you're not in such good shape. And it's teaching us that everything in Israel is based on our actions and our trust in God. The Torah reiterates many, many times that if you do well in the land of Israel, spiritually, you serve God appropriately, you're going to prosper, you're going to be safe, your crops will be plenty, you'll have peace. But if not, the land spits you out. And unfortunately, we've seen it over the generations. We have been thrown out of the land, and persecuted, and we've had exiles. And right now, we have our claim back in the land, and we hope we can remain. That God willing, we'll remain there. But God says the land is naturally, it spits out those who do not serve God. That's a natural response of the land of Israel to those who aren't serving God there. Yeah.
Now it makes sense. A couple years ago, there was a drought.
Yeah.
And we were asked, remember that? We were asked to fast for a day.
Right, right. Yes, that's exactly the point.
That's exactly, yeah.
Right.
Now
right.
I say that. Thank you.
That's exactly the point.
Remember that? Now we see. That's
yeah.
Perfect.
Right. Okay. Exactly the point. So then it tells us that the eyes of God are upon this land from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, constantly. Because it's a land which has a special, God puts special care upon this land. There's a special divine providence which is always there. The land of Israel does not work by natural course in any way, shape, or form. I mean, just read the paper, look at the history of it. I mean, nothing there is natural. Everything seems to just be sudden, strange, miraculous, tragic. I mean, very, very little runs in a natural course. There are very many, many accounts, and we discussed this a while back, that land of Israel, the farms were not producing for centuries. The Torah tells us that when the Jews are there in Israel, so that the farms will produce and the crops will be great. And then when you're out of the land also takes a break. That's what the Torah says. And you have many, many accounts throughout the generations of people going to the land of Israel and seeing it totally desolate. The land is dry, nothing is growing, it's a wasteland, terrible. You go there nowadays, and some of the best crops in the world are grown there. It's beautiful, there's trees, and there's grass, and there's fruits, and they export fruits to the entire world, and you know, what happened? So it's not working based on natural means. There's divine providence, which is changing the land. When Jews are there farming against the land is now back to work. When the Jews weren't there farming against the land was taking a break, and that's what the Torah tells us will happen. But it's a land with divine providence upon it constantly. God's eyes are always seeking out that land, looking at that land, because it has that intimate connection to God in that land. As we mentioned before, many, many mitzvahs are only applicable in the land of Israel, which is why Moshe yearned to get the land of Israel. The Gemara says, what did Moshe want? He wanted to eat a Jaffa orange? Like, why was Moshe like so adamant to getting into the land? So it's because Moshe wanted to perform all the mitzvahs. Moshe in the desert cannot perform many of the mitzvahs which he was commanded by God. Moshe wanted to get to the land of Israel so he can end his life performing all the mitzvahs he possibly could. And he wasn't allowed access to the land of Israel. But it's a land which has this spiritual element to it, this intimate connection to God, which allows us to serve God in ways which we can't do outside the land. I want to quote for you a little bit from Rav Eliyahu Dessler. Rav Dessler was a great thinker, a mashgiach. He spent some time in England, spent some time in, I think, in Lithuania, and he spent some time in Israel. He was a great teacher.
What time period was this roughly?
It was probably spanning between, let's say, the 30s and the 70s, I guess. Rav Dessler. One of the great thinkers of our time. He has a book called Michtav Eliyahu in Hebrew. In English, it's called The Strive for Truth. There's a whole set, probably four or five volumes, called The Strive for Truth by Rabbi Dessler. It was translated. And he discusses at length the land of Israel. So I want to read for you some of his quotes. Number one, he points out that it's really a wonder that the love for this land has remained with us for so long. I mean, the last time the Jews, before 1948, had control over the land, we were thrown out of the land in the year 70. From 70 to 1948, there was never Jewish control in the land of Israel. There was always a small pocket of Jews living there on and off, but nothing significant, and that was it. But day in and day out, for those nearly 2,000 years, in our daily prayers, in our thoughts, in our benching, all we did was yearn, bring us back to the land of Israel, rebuild Jerusalem, let us see your beautiful land. I mean, from the point of Abraham and onwards, we had a connection. And Rav Dessler says that the fact that we yearned for the land for all these years was part of our DNA from Abraham. Our patriarchs supply us with spiritual DNA. And when Abraham was told by God, this land will be yours, and this is going to be the land where you thrive, so within all of Avraham's children is that desire and yearning to connect to that land. And that's remained with us for two millennia. It's because of the holiness of this land. It clings to us. That holiness stuck with us for all these years. So even though there was nearly 2,000 years where we did not control over the land, and we were not there, and the only people there were a small handful of Jews here and there, but we were always yearning, always dreaming of coming back. We say literally, we sing Shir Malos on Shabbos before benching. So it's a quote from Tehillim. We say, "B'shuva Hashem es shiva Sion yu kecholim." When Hashem returned the captivity of Zion, we were like dreamers. Because what do we dream about when we're outside of Israel? We dream about the land of Israel. That's what a Jew dreams about. If our ancestors could see that we have open access to the land in 2013, they wouldn't believe it. Because for 2,000 years, they were yearning for it, and they could not go. For whatever reason, they could not make it there. And we can just go as we please, in and out. We go on a flight, we're there in a few hours, we come back. It's a normal thing. It's unbelievable. It's still an unbelievable thing. And that's because the love of the land stuck with us for all these years, so therefore we were able to, when we earned for it, we never gave up, so we were able to come back once again. We never lost it. That potential was always there. I'll read you a few other quotes from Rav Dessler. Let's find my quotes over here. Rav Dessler also writes that the land of Israel is not just a place on the map, it's a level of sanctity. A person who is purified through his clinging to God and his spirituality, through his study of Torah, forms and mitzvos, when he comes to the land of Israel, he merits a great influence of sanctity upon himself or herself, which brings that person up to a brand new level. The holiness of the land is influenced from all the different levels of spirituality. Even once one dies, there is a concept of being buried in the land of Israel because it affects a person even in their death. The rabbis point out in many ways, based on the Torah, that being buried in Israel is a very special thing, very important thing. Burial in the land of Israel also is looked at as very significant. We see that, I mean, that's what Yaakov tells Yosef, and the very first time you find in the Torah, Yaakov says, Yosef, do not bury me in Egypt. Bring me back up to the land of Israel, bury me there. And all the tribes are buried in the land of Israel, according to the rabbis. We know that Abraham purchased the first Jewish burial plots in Hebron. It's very clear in the Torah that Abraham purchased that. So Rav Dessler writes, even on our small spiritual level that we're on, we can still see that the influence of the land is so great. That a person who studies in Israel, so the information sinks in better. He says, when I personally came to the land of Israel, I felt clearly that it's easier to learn Musar, to change my personal character, and to inspire myself to God. I mean, this is a great Torah sage who spent years and years teaching and studying, both, I think, in Lithuania and in England, the gates of Yeshiva. He said when he got to Israel, he felt connected. He felt that I became much more inspired in the land of Israel at the end of his life. And I feel that there's more heavenly assistance in my study of Torah. That's one quote. Another quote he writes is, the study of Torah in the land of Israel, there's nothing like it. As we said, the air of Israel makes you wiser. And it's very clear, even in our own generation, you see students who go and spend a year in Israel, 2 years in Israel studying, they come back changed. And it's not just because they spent 2 years studying, it's also the land had an impact on these people. Yeah, it's a life change, but it was part of the influence of the land that changed that person. I guess we would suggest that the person that went and isolated themselves studying in France for 2 years, it wouldn't be the same. Even if they studied the same exact topics, the same teachers, when you're in the land of Israel, the Torah influences more, it sinks in more.
Have you heard that studying in Israel for years, like studying 10 years?
I've never heard that, but you know, I can imagine it being said. The quality of it is a different quality. Let me read you one more quote. So what many of us might be wondering is, if this has such a special influence on a person, why are there so many Jews in Israel who are secular, who don't connect to Judaism? I mean, there's a large percentage of the Israeli population, which unfortunately have zero connection to Torah. They're connected to the Jewish people, connected to the land of Israel, but they don't connect to the religious value of Torah. If the land is such a powerful place. What? Okay, fine. I don't see zero connection. You're right. The truth is, even the secular Israeli, deep down, you also see that there's this Jewish soul within them. You talk to them, there definitely is that feeling, that emotion. But there are many Jews who are secular in Israel, and where does that come from? What?
Like
it's the type of connection that's different. But,
different
points and different faiths. Right. So I can word that better, not zero connection. But you see, there are those who are not observant of Torah, who don't define themselves as religious people living in the land of Israel. And there's such a powerful heavenly influence, how could that be? So Rav Dessler writes, there's a concept that Zeluma Zeaselkim, God creates everything balanced. Meaning for every opportunity you have for growth, an equal opportunity, equal and opposite opportunity is there to draw away from God. So for every action, there's equal and opposite reaction. That's a Jewish concept. And every opportunity you have in life, God's going to give you an equal and opposite challenge.
In life or
in everything, in life, no, in life, in our lives. You know, somebody who has potential to grow to the heights, that same person could sink to the depths. It's the same, you know, people who, when you see somebody who's become a great person, that person has potential to be an awful person or a great person. People who we see are kind of average type people, their realm, their pendulum doesn't swing quite as far. But that's the concept we have.
I'm sorry, Rabbi, are you saying we will always be challenged like that, and it's a choice we made, or we'll be challenged like that after we reach, if we reach great heights? Are you saying that we have
no, even, before, even before, you reach the, before you reach those heights, I mean, that person could have made a choice to go either direction.
I see. It's before,
you take someone, let's just take an example, you take Hitler, Yimach Shemo, the terrible, one of the worst people in history to ever discuss, the most wicked, awful people in history. He was a very powerful, intelligent person who was a very powerful speaker. And he had potential. He probably could influence the masses for good as well. He had the power within him to take everybody to good or one to evil. So he chose evil. That's what he did. But that same person who chose evil, had he chosen good, could have flipped the world around to goodness. Because we see how many people can influence. That's the concept. if you're in a place like Israel, which offers you such spiritual opportunities, so well, that also means that the challenges might be just as strong in the other direction. So you find so many Jews who in Israel who may not tap into the spiritual elements because there's a pushback as well. For every action, there's equal and opposite reaction. That's the concept. So that's what he writes, that it's a land where God is constantly watching. There's an opportunity for the most intimate connection to God in the land of Israel, but also presents us with the challenges. You know, and there are many challenges in the land of Israel as well. And those people who aren't, whether they're the conscious or subconscious, the challenges are there. And therefore, you're not going to find everybody just jumping onto the bandwagon of God, because even the potential to go to the greatest heights is there, it can also take you the other way. So that's this concept. That deserves more discussion as well, which I don't think we have time for today. But that's a concept you find very often in Torah, which is that it's called Zelu Maseh. God created one for another. Now everything has its opposite. So if there's some, you know, you have a Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara. You have everything's going, you have Yaakov and you have Esau. There's going to be an equal and opposite choice that one can make. Just to, as an example, you know, the Gemara discusses some of the greatest Torah scholars in the Gemara said that I have such a terrible struggle with my desire for women. This is a quote in the Gemara. But he became one of the greatest Torah scholars because that same struggle which he could have fallen prey to, he could become an immoral person, an adulterer, someone on those lines, he also had the opportunity to grow great. So he says that I have an equal challenge in the world of immorality, but that I have the same potential to grow in the world of morality. But that was basically his point. And we see that all over the place. So the land of Israel, yes, it offers us a great opportunity for growth, but you read through the Tanakh, you read through the stories and the prophets, you look through history, modern history, ancient history, there's always those Jews who are doing the absolute wrong thing in the land of Israel. That's because the potential to grow to the heights is there, but also one can make other choices to go the wrong direction. And tshuva, yeah, and tshuva takes you right back to the place that you should be going. That's where tshuva takes you. So that's the potential of the land of Israel is always there. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos that God gave us three special gifts, but they only come through difficulty. One of those gifts is the land of Israel. The land of Israel comes through a lot of difficulty. Emotional, physical, spiritual, religious, psychological, there's so many difficulties which for the Jews have had from the start, from Avram's time until now, being in Israel, staying in Israel, thriving in Israel, historically, it's just an amazing story to look through the history of the Jews in Israel. So it comes through difficulty, but that's because the potential is there for such a connection to God and to grow to such heights. So God says, "So I'm going to give you a challenge as well. Nothing can be easy in life. Nothing comes easy to us. We have to grab this potential." So when you think through it, you know, so whether you like Netanyahu or not, you know, whether you say Hallel on Yom Ha'atzmaut or you don't, whether you believe in Land for Peace or believe in Land for Peace, no matter what your feelings are, peace for the modern state of Israel, peace for peace, modern. Whatever we feel in terms of the modern state of Israel, the politics, the religious value of it, that's irrelevant to our discussion. That's all secondary. The holiness of the land is clear. It comes from the very beginning of the Torah. It comes all the way to our very day. The potential of the land is there. We have to really appreciate the open access we have nowadays. It's incredible. The fact that you can hop on a flight to a beautiful airport in Tel Aviv, get on a van, go straight to Old Jerusalem, daven at the Western Wall, see all the sights, feel the holiness of the land. It's an opportunity which people would just fantasized about. Yeah, they couldn't believe it.
Two-week tour,
come back home. You know, yeah, it's incredible. You know, it's really incredible.
Have a kosher snack.
Yeah, I mean, these things is unheard of for centuries, you know, for millennia. And we have it. We're used to it. So we have it, and it's there for us. So we have to appreciate that. And we can go to Israel. Whether a person lives in Israel, visits Israel, studies in Israel, but the potential when you go to Israel is such an amazing potential for spiritual growth, that connection. And hopefully those of us who have been there have felt it. You know, I don't know if everyone's been, everyone hasn't been, but those who have been there have felt that connection. When you walk to Israel, you feel different. I'll personally tell you that, you know, when I'm there, I can feel my prayers are different when I'm there. When I daven in Israel, I felt different. I really felt different. It's clearer, more focused, and you feel a connection. You stand at the Western Wall davening, you feel connected. This is a different feeling there. So we have to appreciate that. And we have to seize the opportunity. So when we go to Israel, we take the time to tour. So we can't just view it as a time to take a dip in the Dead Sea, you know, and see the mountains. And see, you know, we have to seize the spiritual opportunities that are there. So the land itself is precious, and to appreciate the beautiful land God gave us is part of it. So taking a dip in the Dead Sea and climbing up to, you know, Engedi, and that's part of it. To see the beauty of the Mediterranean Sea, that's all part of it. But to never ignore the spiritual opportunities that the land has, and to appreciate this is the God-given land to the Jewish people. This is where our soul can thrive best in the world. This is where we find our place if we're there. That's how we should view it. So right now, you know, the situation is not ideal in many different ways. Right now, you know, to say that everyone who moves to Israel is going to immediately thrive, it's not necessarily true. Everyone has their own reasons why they're not there, why they should be there, why they shouldn't be there. Everyone has their own reasons, and those reasons are valid. They're valid in many ways. But we can't ignore the fact that this is a place where our soul can really thrive. Now, like we said before, we have to understand only those who go in with that goal are going to be swept into the current. If you go into Israel wanting to be swept into the spiritual growth, so you'll be swept in. If you go in without that goal, so you won't be swept in. You know, it depends on your own personal goals. But the current is strong. You jump in the current, it brings you closer to God. That's where Eretz Yisrael, straight to God, that's where it brings you. That's what it does for you.
If you go with going to Israel with the idea that you want to live in Eretz HaKodesh and you want a really good experience, and you know that it's one of the places that's acquired through difficulty, and you think, okay, I'm up for it.
Yeah.
Like, trust my Hashem, I'll hope for the best, I'm going to go do it. I mean, wouldn't you generally, you will have a more positive experience than if you go and say, well, we'll see if it works or not, maybe we'll just
You're right. You know, in terms of the physical, I mean, if you go in just with non-committal attitude, that's true. You know, you're not jumping into the current. There's a current there that's going. If you don't jump in, the current's not going to help you. So you're standing on the side looking at the current go, but you're not jumping in. I mean, there are difficulties very practically.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, getting a job there, the jobs don't pay as well as American jobs. As Americans, we have to learn the language, we have to learn the culture.
Yeah.
Schooling there for children is very complicated. You know, even though the schools are Jewish, it's very complicated. The extremes are there. There are things very complicated about the land of Israel. Obviously, security issues, the army issues, you know, there's a lot of things involved. But on the other hand, you speak to Jews in Israel, they'll tell you that the religious Jews in Israel will tell you, we feel connected. We feel that what we're doing here brings us closer to God. And again, we've probably all experienced that in some way or other. Those of us who've been there have experienced it one way or the other. So that's all there. So if you go in, I think it's a good point. If you go in, Dad said, I'm going to jump into this current to bring me to God, that will make your odds of succeeding much greater. If you go in saying that, we'll give it a try, see what it's like, so then you're still kind of an onlooker watching everyone else make it through. That's how we can view it.
Is there something about God gave us three gifts?
Yeah.
Israel?
Torah. And the third one, I believe, is Tefillah. I think it's the third one. I don't remember. I think it's Tefillah.
What's it again?
The three gifts that God gave us, but they only come through difficulty.
Yeah.
It's Torah, Israel. I think it's Tefillah is the third one. I think. I still get up. I think it's Tefillah is the third one.
The Parnassus.
Right? The Shuvah. So I guess that's another gift difficulty.
Like
I'll double check that. I can't remember the third one. I think it might be Tefillah, the third one. But that's the idea. So we have to always have that in mind. And just as an aside, there are many sources that say a place of Torah study, a Beis Medrash, a synagogue, that actually has the power of the land of Israel. There's a Medrash which tells us that when God destroyed, when the Romans destroyed the Beis Hamikdash, so angels came and took a piece of dirt from the temple and scattered it throughout the entire world to all the different shuls and Bate Midrashim that will be in the future. Meaning that every single shul, or Beis Medrash, or Yeshiva, that contains within it the power of Eretz Yisrael. We have one more minute. There's a story in the Gemara in Maseches Brachos. So one of the rabbis comments to the other rabbis, how is it that people live to an old age in Babylonia? You know, I mean, the greatest scholars are in Babylonia. That's the Babylonian Talmud. It's the greatest scholars were in Babylonia after the destruction of the temple. So they said, how can it be that people live to old age in Babylonia? The Torah says that Man Yirbu Yameichem Al Hadama Shirish BaHashem, that you're going to live to the lengthy days on the land that God had promised to you. But how can you live to lengthy days on the land of Babylonia? That was the question posed in the Gemara. So the answer was given that it's because they come early to the Beis Medrash to study, the Shul to daven, they stay late at night to study and daven, Therefore, that's why they merit it. So the great commentator, the Marsha, points out, well, he didn't answer the question. The question was, you can only live to lengthy days in Israel. And just because they study a lot of Torah and pray a lot, they weren't living in Israel, so how could they live to lengthy days? So he says that the answer the Gemara is giving us is telling us that when someone goes to a house of Torah study or house of prayer, those places have the power of the land of Israel. You step in, the energy of Israel is there. Right? That current is in those places as well. So the thing is, in Israel, no matter where you go, you're in that current. In America, you have to step into a Beis Medrash or a shul to be in that current.
That's right. You have to drive 5 miles to get there.
Yeah, right. But the current also is there in other lands, just in a much more limited way. And so if we go to places of sanctity, even in Maryland, we can still find that current of Eretz Yisrael. But yet, Eretz Yisrael, no matter where you are, you're in that current. That's the major difference. So we should merit to have the full redemption, and all be able to return to the land of Israel, have it at peace as it's supposed to be with all the Jews there, building of the third Beis HaMikdash, speedily in our days.